right. Good morning, everybody. Hey, where'd Jordan go? Where's Jordan? Jordan. Our singer, Jordan. White Chocolate, son. Man, I love Jordan, and I hate him all at the same time because I wish that I could sing. So we have these fancy towels that we had made a long time ago. Pretty cool, huh? It'll all make sense later, I hope. That's the plan anyway. Hey, so we're starting a new series today called, what are we starting to say? Oh, Not Your Average Joe. How many of you guys have ever had kind of these conflicts within yourself of, like, this is who you think you're supposed to be, but you kind of feel like, you know, you're not everything that you were hoping that you would be? And I think a lot of times it happens when we're kids, when we're young. Like, ask any kid what they want to be when they grow up, and they give you these spectacular answers. Astronauts. I told you guys a few weeks ago, mine was boxer and ninja, neither of which are very possible for me, right? Like, you just have these grandiose ideas as to what it is that you want to be when you grow up, and then as you start to grow up, you conform to the norm, right? You start to fall, you rank and file, and your dreams kind of get crushed, and we become average Joes, right? That's the tendency. But I think that we're not supposed to be average. I think we're supposed to be extraordinary. I think there should be something about us that sets us apart from the world that we live in, right? And here's the thing, like, I do believe that every one of us are created in the image of God. Like, it talks about in Genesis chapter 2 that God created man in his own image. And if God, the creator of the universe, crafted you and formed you and made you, there's something special about you, right? There's something unique about you. There is greatness inside of you. And that's kind of the heart of this series, is that I want us to discover that, to talk about that, to figure out what that means for us, because it's going to be different for every one of us. And to do that, I'm going to look at the life of a guy named Joseph, or Joe, right? We're going to call Joseph Joe. And so Joseph is a character from the book of Genesis. If you go back, if you want to read it on your own, which I encourage you to do, Genesis chapter 37 through 50 is the life of Joseph. And Joseph had some crazy, crazy experiences in his life. He had the extreme highs and the extreme lows. Like, in modern terms, it's the guy that was a billionaire, now he lives on the street, then he's a billionaire again. Like, I mean, the most extreme highs and the most extreme lows. He had a tremendous amount of adversity, but he also had an incredible amount of success in his life. And I think there are some things that we can learn from the life of Joseph that will teach us, help us to not be average Joes. And one thing that really stands out to me about the life of Joseph is that whatever life threw at him, whatever adversity came his way, he fought back. Like, he gave it everything that he had. And we'll talk about fighting just a little bit, because I like to fight. How many of you guys grew up, like, you love wrestling? Or if you're from East Texas, it's wrestling. You love wrestling. You did, how many of you guys did, like, the boxing, you know, where you box with each other? And it was fun. Slap boxing, yes. Like, these are fun, right? There's no violence in it. This is entertainment for us, right? And so we'll talk about some of that stuff in a little bit. Because one of the things that happens when you're in a boxing match is you've got people in your corner, your trainer, and when you're getting your butt kicked, what they want to do is throw in the, okay, keep that in mind, right? So one of the things that really stands out to me about the life of Joseph is that, man, he didn't quit. He didn't stop. When adversity came his way, he could have laid down, but he chose not to lay down. He chose to make the most out of his circumstance. Matter of fact, when life gave him lemons, he made, like, extra super sweet lemonade, right? Not just lemonade, because you've had lemonade that's like, ooh, that's lemonade. And you've had lemonade that's like, ooh, lemonade, right? He made some, ooh, lemonade. And that's how he approached life. He had a life of excellence that honored God. And there's something that I believe in each and every one of us that's like that. It's like, we don't want to be average. We don't want to be ordinary. We want to do something incredible with our lives. We want to do something that when we get to the end of our lives, be it 70, 80 years, whatever the case may be, we can look back and we can say, I lived a good life. I lived a life that mattered. I lived a life that made an impact on my kids and my kids' kids, right? We want to live lives that are generationally impactful, right? And I don't think you can do that if you're concerned with being average or you're comfortable being average. I heard a quote one time that really kind of just, you ever had those gut punches? You read something and you're like, ooh, right? And it was, most Christians aren't in danger of losing their lives. They're in danger of wasting their lives. right? I mean, especially in America, right? Where most of us are not in danger of losing our lives. There is no imminent threat of persecution and getting our heads chopped off because we, you know, profess to be Christians or we love Jesus. Like we're not in danger of losing our lives. We're in danger of wasting our lives. We're in danger of winning at things that don't matter, right? That's what we're most in danger of. And I just want us to be aware of it. I want us to think about it and how we cannot be average Joes. And so that's really the heart behind the series. Just as Joseph wasn't an average Joe, I don't think we're supposed to be average either. I think there's greatness inside each and every one of us. And it looks different for all of us, which is awesome, right? Because nobody wants, like, we're all great and we all look the same. That's not very great, right? We're all spectacular, we're all awesome, and we're all exactly identical. That's not very awesome and unique. I think it's different for all of us, and that's what's so powerful and cool about it. So let's talk about Joseph for a minute. If you look at, like, we're going to give you the Cliff's Notes version, overview of Joseph. Here's Joseph at 30,000 feet. So Joseph, he was the 11th son of a guy named Jacob. Jacob was a mess, but God loved him anyway. Somebody say, all right, right? So that's good. So Jacob had a bunch of kids. He had 12 sons, and one of his sons, the 11th son, was Joseph. And here's the funny thing. Joseph was Jacob's favorite. Out of all those boys, that's going to be a problem, right? Because, like, when you got daddy's favorite, I mean, he loved his son, Joseph, so much that he gave him a special coat, like a colorful blazer that Joseph got to wear around everywhere to let all of his brothers know that his dad loved him more than he loved them. And that's not really a good situation. It's a recipe for disaster, right? So the long and short of it is he kind of got into this precarious position with his brothers, where there was a lot of animosity, and he kind of exacerbated it. He made it worse because he also told his brothers that he had these dreams that God was going to put him above them and that they were going to serve him. And so when you're like the youngest or one of the youngest, you don't really tell your older brothers those sorts of things unless you're just asking for it, right? But Joe was asking for it. He wanted some of that. He was ambitious, and he believed that God had a plan for his life, and he was comfortable enough in his own skin to put himself out there and do that. So his brothers resented him, and they decided one day that they were going to kill him. Brotherly love, right? And this isn't like the wrestling, and this isn't shot. They were like for real going to kill Joseph. And so the oldest brother, Reuben, he's like, I don't think we should kill him, but we can still get rid of him and make a little money off of the deal too, right? Like the enterprising older brother, Reuben. So they decided they're going to sell Joseph into slavery. They sold their brother, their own brother, into slavery. And so Joseph gets shipped off to Egypt to work in a guy's house named Potiphar. And this is a lot of information. We'll kind of fill in some of these gaps over the next few weeks. So he's serving in this house as a servant, as a slave. He is owned by this man named Potiphar, and he works really hard in these awful circumstances. Come on, somebody, right? Hello. That's where we need to focus on a lot of times. It's like, hey, maybe you face some situations that you don't want to face. Maybe you're confronted with some things that are out of your control. Stop whining about it and make the most of it. Because you know what, like most Christians, not our church, but other churches, like most Christians, what they do, like the first sign of adversity, it's like, oh my God, like if God really loved me, why would he let me go through this? And if you would just stop for a minute, princess, and step back and look at your calamity and your struggle compared to the struggles of other people around the world, you would realize that you're just being a drama queen and you need to knock it off, right? But not our church, other people in other churches, right? So Joseph goes on to serve in Potiphar's house. And then after being faithful and consistent in Potiphar's house as a slave, he gets wronged again. Potiphar's wife, we've got some words for her and some names for her, but we'll bring those up later. So she accuses him of doing something that he didn't do that ultimately landed him in prison. So Joseph, he goes from being his father's favorite son, who was very prominent, his father was very prominent, to being sold into slavery and working in a man's house named Potiphar. And then he gets falsely accused of doing something that he did not do. And then he gets thrown into prison. It's like, could you get any lower? And you know what he could have done? He could have been like, this isn't fair. Come on, church folk, right? This isn't fair. He could have played the this isn't fair card, but instead of playing the this isn't fair card, he rolled up his sleeves and he went to work where he was at. He was faithful and consistent in the season that God put him in the circumstance that God put him in the situation that God put him in. So let's talk about your job for a second, right? How many of you have had crappy jobs? How many of you have had jobs with jerk bosses or people that you just can't get along with? Don't get too excited about that. I see some of you like, two hands to, like, man, do that in worship next time, right? Jeez. And so sometimes you've got situations that you're going to face, but I promise you, your situation isn't as bad as Joseph's, and he faced it with some audacity. He faced it with some tenacity. He didn't quit. He didn't stop, and he sure the heck didn't whine about it. We become why-knee Christians when we face adversity. W-H-Y-N-Y, whiny. Why me, God? Why would you do this to me, your beloved child, right? We love to play that card with God. Why me? Why would you put me in this circumstance? Why would you put them in my life? Why would you put this adversity in my path? Why? And we just don't accomplish anything when we approach life like that. In fact, let me back up for a second. You do accomplish something when you act like that. You accomplish telling everybody in the world that your God is very little and your problems are very large. That's what you accomplish when you do that. Dang! Okay. So all of that, I am way out of sorts here. All of that to say, so Joseph ends up in prison, where he, again, works hard, is faithful, is consistent, actually finds himself being promoted in kind of a leadership role in prison, and ultimately is betrayed again by some people who he helps out. And so, you know, the moral to the story is when you help people out, you're probably going to get betrayed. Suck it up, put your big boy pants on, and keep going, right? That's the only time you can get hurt is when you make yourself vulnerable. But that doesn't mean that we don't make ourselves vulnerable. We keep serving, and we keep loving, and we keep giving. So finally, the crescendo, right, the climax of Joseph's life is after all of the turmoil and after all of the adversity, he's promoted to the second in command. He's serving Pharaoh, who is the most powerful man in the world, which means that Joseph is the second most powerful man in the entire world. You want to talk about a roller coaster, right? It's not even a roller coaster. It's just like, right? I guess that's a roller coaster. But there's only one big hill. It's like the cliffhanger. And then you come back up. Or the Superman, right? Okay. So there are some things that I learned, I think that we could learn from this passage and kind of Joseph's life. And the first one is this. Devotion equals promotion. Young people, and by young, I mean I'm not that old, but you know you're starting to get old when you start calling people young people, right? And speaking of young people, Shelly and I, for whatever godforsaken reason, are going to camp with the teenagers, so we are in need of massive amounts of prayer. You guys, y'all don't understand. Shelly's got energy for days. I need beauty rest, man. I need cat naps, and I need, you know, just time away from crazy stuff. And so, where do we get on that? Oh, young people. Yeah. Here we go. Devotion equals promotion. You don't start at the top. You don't get everything that you think you should get just because you think you should get it. And I know that entitlement is an issue, right? And it's not even really your fault. It's your parents' fault. Let me tell you about, because this is what we do generationally or societally. What we do is adults are like, oh, kids these days, who raised the kids? Whose fault is it, right? It's the parents' fault. And if you've got issues, it's your parents' fault. And at some point, you got to be mature enough to take on your own responsibility for your own life. But let's just kind of talk to the parents for a minute. When you raise entitled kids, it's your fault. You did it. Now fix it. And so devotion equals promotion. It's consistency and faithfulness in seasons of adversity. It's consistency and faithfulness even when you don't feel like it, or you don't feel like you're making progress, or you don't feel like you're growing or changing or making a difference. It's faithfulness. It's consistency. And devotion equals promotion. In Joseph's life, you see this. He modeled this so well. He modeled that, hey, even if I face some adversity, I'm going to be committed. I'm going to be devoted. And this is kind of the thing that he adopted as a mantra, a mentality. His attitude was that to serve God is to serve others. to serve God, if I want to serve God, because we try to distinguish between the two, and I don't think they're exclusive like that. I think the way that we treat other people ultimately is a reflection of how we view God. And I think when we serve other people, we're serving God. And when we're serving God, we're serving other people. Like, they're not exclusive. They work together, right? And so in Joseph's life, you usually see that the good stuff only happens after some blood, sweat, and tears. Like, just think about your life for a minute. Anything, what do you value? What are some of the things that you value? I suspect that they're things that you work pretty hard for. The things that matter most to you, your family, and maybe where you're at as a family. Well, that didn't happen overnight. That was years and years and years of getting to this point and growing together as people. It was work. It was blood. It was sweat. And man, it was tears, right? If your kids don't make you cry, you don't love them right. It's blood, sweat, and tears. The things that we work in and for are the things that we value the most. And it's devotion that allows us to get to that point. We live in a world that likes to quit. We got a lot of quitters. 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 All right. I feel like Mike Singletary. Y'all don't know who Mike Singletary is, do you? I want winners. All right. But we live in a world with a lot of quitters. We got people that, you know, I don't know what the average tenure is for a job these days, but I suspect it's not long. I imagine if it's a year, I'm impressed, because it seems like people quit and they go to the next thing, and they quit and they go to the next thing, and they become disillusioned very quickly. Like, you know, it's like, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And they get there and it's not, because, you know, life is not unicorns and rainbows, it's work. And then we appreciate things that we put effort into, but if you don't put the effort into it, you'll never appreciate it. But that's another story, right? People like to quit on things. They quit on jobs. They quit on relationships. Right, we live in a world that quits on relationships. When they stand up in front of the preacher up there, because that's what they call him at the weddings, because they don't know what to call him. They're like, hey, preacher. And they stand up before the preacher. I guess that's a preacher joke. You guys don't understand that. It's a career casualty, right? And so you stand up in front of the preacher, and you make these covenants before God. Not a contract, not an agreement, a covenant before God that you're going to be together till death do you part. And that means one of you probably is going to kill the other one, but that's just... Do you watch ID Channel? When somebody dies, who is the first person they look? They always look at the spouse, right? Till death do you part. That one was free, right? And so people quit on relationships, even though they stood up in front of the preacher before God and for everybody, and they made these covenants before God that they were going to be with each other through thick and thin, rich and poor, health and sickness and all of these things, and they quit. We live in a world that likes to quit, but devotion results in promotion. You don't get to experience the bliss of 40 years. I was talking to a guy yesterday, and he was a funny, funny guy, and he and his wife had just celebrated 40 years of marriage, and he said that he looked at her not too long ago, and they're like, they love each other, and you can tell, like, because you've seen couples that have been together for a long time, and I'm like, y'all just put each other out of misery, right? Just kill each other, go out, like, murder, suicide, whatever you want to do. I'm kidding. But so he was telling her the other day, he was like, at this point, it's just not fiscally responsible for us to not be together, so we're going to be together, right? And it was a joke, but the point is that his devotion has promoted them to this place where they get to experience the joy of grandchildren, right? You get to experience the joy, hey, we're going to retire together, and we're going to travel the world together, and we're going to do all of these things together, but you don't get to experience that unless you're devoted in the interim, in the in-between. And so we live in a world that quits on goals and dreams and aspirations and disciplines when they don't see progress. But devotion equals promotion. We want to start at the top and not work our way up to it. But it doesn't work like that. And you wouldn't appreciate it if it did work like that. Right? If you started on the top, you wouldn't appreciate the top. You got to start at the bottom and understand struggles so that when you get higher up, you can appreciate the grind. Right? You can appreciate the lows. You can appreciate how hard things really can be. And so I think it's important for us to remember that. So that's what Joe did. He was devoted, and he was promoted as a result of his devotion. So Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 through 6 is kind of the story we're going to look at today. And this is what it says. This is when Joseph was sold into slavery and kind of the sequences that followed. Joseph, and I'm going to need some crowd participation. So when I do this, I need you to say the following word, right? Because I think there are some things that we can take from this. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that That was good. We're going to do it one more time just because I feel like we're getting somewhere. The Lord was with Joseph so that he
prospered.
And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him
success
in everything he did, Joseph found
favor.
I got a story about that one, but I'll tell you in a minute. In his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his own household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord
blessed
the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The
blessing
of the Lord was on Potiphar, was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Potiphar was living large. Like, I mean, in my mind, life, like when you have arrived, is when the only thing you have to worry about is what's for dinner. Right? You don't have to worry about work. You don't have to worry about people. You don't have to worry about drama and problems. It's just like, what's for dinner? Potiphar had arrived, but it was only because of Joseph and his faithfulness and his commitment. And here's the part that I don't want us to miss, is that as Joseph was faithful and as Joseph was committed, you start to see these words, these things come into play, and that's where God's blessing is on Joseph's life. God's blessing is on Joseph's life. God's favor is on Joseph's life when he doesn't quit, when he doesn't stop, when he's faithful in some adversity, when he faces circumstances and he doesn't throw in the towel, when he faces some adversity and he doesn't lay down and cry and whine and ask God, why me? Right? And he doesn't play the it's not fair card, because, I mean, think about it. That's not fair. There's nothing fair about the things that happened to Joseph, but that's not the card that he plays. So what I think the first thing I think we can take from that passage is this. God is at work no matter where we are. No matter where we are. You could be a slave, a servant in Potiphar's house, and God is at work. You could be in prison for something that you didn't do, and God can be at work. You can be at a job that you don't really care for, and God can use you. God can be at work in whatever adversity you face, whatever circumstance you find yourself in, God is at work. And again, our initial response is typically kind of the whininess, and I don't think that's the way that we should approach it. I think we should have a mentality like Joseph that, hey, wherever I'm at, and whoever it is that he's placed in my life to serve is my opportunity to serve God by serving other people. It's a mentality. It's an attitude that you adopt. And when you adopt that attitude, it's easier for you to see how God is working in your life in all circumstances and all seasons. Because this is what happens, and you've probably experienced this. When you go to a job or a circumstance that you don't particularly care for, so many times you'll meet somebody there who needed you to be there, right? You guys know what I'm talking about? Just give me a little... Right? You go to this job that you don't particularly care for, and you go to work on a day you don't really want to go in, and then you meet somebody that you wouldn't have met otherwise, or somebody comes up to you and they want you to pray for them because their father has cancer. Right? And if you wouldn't have been there, you would have missed that opportunity for God to work in your life and through your life. And so we don't quit and we don't stop, and we're faithful and we're consistent. That's the mentality that Joseph adopted, was that to serve God is to serve others. And when you do that, you can see God work at every situation, in every situation, and every circumstance in your life. Had Joseph thrown in the towel, had he just quit, or he had decided that he was going to conform to the norm, then he never would have seen the favor of God in his life. We wouldn't have seen the words that we pointed out, like success and blessing and favor. You don't get those without some commitment, some devotion, and some faithfulness, right? If we don't allow God to work through our circumstances, we won't see all that he has in store for us. If we don't allow God to work through our adversity, we won't see what it is that he can do when we get down to nothing, right? Because there's this old saying, when you're down to nothing, God's up to something. And that's good, right? Because if you've been there, you know that's good. Because when you've got nothing else left and you don't have any more answers and you're not smart enough to figure out the situation and your banking account says, see, the way it's set up is I got the checking and I got savings. And when you're down to nothing, God's up to something. And that's a good place to be. We believe that God can work in any circumstance, in any adversity that we face, but we need to live like we believe it. That's what it makes such a profound impact on the world that we live in. Like, we throw these heavy words around like purpose. My life has purpose and meaning. But when adversity comes, we lay down. So if your life has purpose, that means when adversity comes, there's purpose in your adversity, right? So we don't lay down, we don't quit, we embrace it, we fight through it, we fight against it. We don't throw in the towel, we pick up our towel, right? So we've got to allow God to work through our circumstances. He leverages our sweat. I heard a story one time about a farmer. I don't know much about farming, but I know you got to like dig the rows and, you know, then you plant stuff and then it grows, right? And so there was a of all people, preacher jokes are good today, right? So there was a preacher that went up to the farmer and, you know, they were standing there together looking at the land. And it's, have you driven by farms? Like it's so impressive. They're perfectly lined rows, acres and acres and acres of rows. And, you know, they work hard. These guys work so hard from sunup to sundown and the effort that they put in. And so the preacher is standing next to the farmer and he looks at him. He's like, man, God did such a great job on this farm. And the farmer's like, yeah, I wish he was here helping me when I was planting everything. And there's some truth in that, right? Like, obviously, God created the ground and the soil and the seed, but we've got to put in the work. We've got to put in the sweat. We've got to be faithful and consistent. And then he's the one that sends the rain and makes it grow. So we plant and we sow and we put some seed in the ground, and God's the one who makes it rain and makes it grow. You don't stop going to the job that you don't like. You're faithful and you're consistent. You don't quit on that relationship. You're faithful and you're consistent. And then God makes it rain. Make it rain, right? God leverages our sweat. That was a weak clap, by the way. Weak. So that's the first thing. God is at work no matter where you are, no matter what your circumstances, no matter what adversity you're facing, or this is one of those messages you need to lock in the vault. Because if you're not facing some now, you will be soon. The second thing and the only other thing, somebody say amen, is that we should be at work no matter where we are. Talking about work in church, dude, ain't got no sense, right? The second thing that I think we could take away from this passage is that we should be at work no matter where we are, just like Joseph, just like our Joe here, right? He was at work. He was faithful. He was consistent in every season of his life, and he could have gotten all up in his feelings due to the injustice that was done to him. He could have quit. He could have played the it's not fair card, but instead, like we said, he rolled up his sleeves and he went to work, and I think we would be wise to do the same. You want to point to the fact that God has purpose in your life and meaning in your life and everything is significant, then prove it by being faithful even when you're facing some circumstances. Approach every season with some audacity and tenacity. Those are fun words to say. And I think we should just run hard in whatever lane of life that God has placed us in, and whatever season of life God has placed us in, give it whatever you've got. It says in Ecclesiastes, whatever your hands find to do, do it with all of your might. Whatever your hands find to do, do it with all of your might. It doesn't give exemptions or clauses in there. It's not like if you enjoy it, then do it with all of your might. Or if you feel like you're being properly rewarded and compensated, then do it with all of your might. We don't get the outs like that. There's not an exemption for your feelings in that verse. It's whatever your hands find to do, whatever is in front of you, whatever God has placed in your path at this season in your life, give it everything that you've got. Do it with all of your might. And if you want to make a difference in the world that you live in, live that out. Because we live in a world where people don't put in much effort. Right? Like, most people go to work and punch a clock. They ain't trying to do anything. They ain't trying to make a difference. They're just trying to make some money so they can pay some bills, because they work to live. They don't live to work. Right? That's kind of the world we live in. If you want to make an impact on the world around you, then run hard in your lane. And whatever your hands find to do, do it with all of your might. And so that's how we should approach whatever season we're in. So it's whatever season you're in, wherever we are, we should be at work. Right? We should be at work. I want to wrap this up today by asking a few questions, kind of with respect to some of the adversity maybe that you're facing, some of the circumstances that you might be going through. And I think that it's easy to get caught up in kind of thinking about other people and their problems and not being honest about our own. All right? Nobody else has ever done that. I do that from time to time, but I'm glad you guys don't do that. And I'm glad you're honest in church, too. But what is it in your life that you're ready to quit on that may just be the struggle that leads to your success? Like, what is it in your life that you're so close to giving up on that's potentially just a barrier that leads to your blessing? Right? What is it in your life that you're ready to throw in the towel on that God could use to make a profound impact on the world around you? What is it in your life that you're just ready to quit? And you want to quit, and you're all up in your feelings, and you've asked all the why-me questions, and you know deep down in your heart that there's more for your life, there's greater for your life, but you feel so trapped because of the struggle, because of the adversity. What is it that you're ready to quit on? I want to circle back. Let's look at Joseph. He adopted the mentality that he's not going to throw in the towel, he's going to pick up the towel. And in Christianity, the towel is very symbolic, because you find this passage in the New Testament where Jesus was about, he knew what was about to happen. He was about to go through some incredible suffering, some incredible adversity that we'll never, ever be able to fully understand, right? Talk about injustice, talk about, you know, somebody taking on something that they didn't deserve. That's the greatest form of injustice, and Jesus willingly did that for us. So stop talking about injustice, right? Stop talking about your life's not fair. Jesus just murdered that. But that's another story, right? So Jesus, as he's about to enter into the season in his life, this is what he does. He brings all of his disciples together. They're eating, and Jesus loved to eat, which is another reason I love Jesus, because I love to eat. But I heard somebody say the other day, you can't eat like Jesus unless you walked like Jesus, because they walked everywhere. So I suspect Jesus was nice and lean. If I eat like Jesus, I would not be so. So anyway, he brought all of his disciples together, and they're having a meal. And Jesus, it says that he kind of understood that they needed to know what life was all about, that even though he was the Son of Man, he didn't come to be served, but to serve. And this is what it says in John chapter 13, verses 4 and 5. It says that he got up from the table, he took off his robe, he wrapped a towel around his waist, and poured water into a basin. And then he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that he had around him. Jesus didn't throw in the towel. He picked up the towel. And if there was ever a time where he could have or should have or maybe wanted to throw in the towel, I suspect this is it, because he knew what was around the corner. But Jesus didn't throw in the towel. He picked up the towel to serve other people. And I think we would be wise to do the same. Don't quit. Don't throw in the towel. Don't give up on that job. Don't give up on that relationship. Don't give up on that dream. Don't give up on that circumstance. Don't throw in the towel. Pick up the towel. Serve other people in the season that you're in, the adversity that you face. See that God is at work no matter where you are, and you should be at work no matter where you are. Don't throw in the towel. I felt like doing the terrible towels and whipping it around, but it's a little bigger than I thought I was going to use. Pick up your towel and serve people. Wherever you are, if you're a student, pick up your towel and serve people. This universe does not revolve around you, sweetheart. Right, and the earlier we learn this, the better off we are. Pick up your towel and serve people. If you're older, which in our church is a very loose term, if you're older, like it doesn't change with the stage or age of your life, right? None of that changes. You're not exempt from serving because you achieve a certain age, right? In fact, if you're older, maybe you should model it for the younger people who you talk about are entitled all the time. Just my opinion. And so, wherever you're at in your life, whatever season of life you're in, don't throw in the towel. Pick up the towel. Serve wherever you are, and watch your faithfulness lead to God's blessing. Watch your consistency lead to success. That's an easy thing to say. Watch your consistency lead to some success, right? Watch your faithfulness lead to God's favor, because we know these things. We know that God, he doesn't just give us everything that we want, because we couldn't handle it if that were the case. It says, but he who is faithful with little will be given much. When we're faithful with little things and just a little bit of adversity, then God opens doors that we couldn't ever open on our own. So trust that God will be at work in your life at whatever season you face, and pick up your towel. Amen. Let me pray for us. Father, we love you. God, thank you so much for all that you do. Thank you, Jesus, that you gave us this model, this template to base our lives off of. That we're not here for us. The world doesn't revolve around us. God, we're not the center of the universe. But we're here, God, because you placed us here, and you've given us purpose, and you put some adversity in our path God, not to test us, but to perfect us, to make us who it is that you want us to be. And I pray, God, that you'll help us to see with eyes of compassion and mercy those who are around us that we can serve. Those who you place in our path in those circumstances that we wish we weren't in, that help us to understand that you are at work no matter where we are, and that we should be at work no matter where we are. God, I pray that you would destroy, God, this comfort that we have with normal, with average, that we would want to be extraordinary, that we would want to be special, for lack of a better term, God, that we would want to please you with a heart that's excellent and find favor in your eyes by being faithful and consistent in whatever season of life that we're in. Jesus, we love you, and it's in your incredible name we pray, and everybody said, amen.